Okay, I'm Wallace Edgecombe, also known as Wally Edgecombe. And I came to Hostos on my first day of work was July 2nd, 1973. And I worked for 39 years and a day. So I left in 2012. So it was long haul, a lifetime, maybe three lifetimes. And I was witness to a lot of what went on here, of course, at the college and then also in the South Bronx and the Puerto Rican and Latino community citywide. So I was hired in the Office of College Relations as the assistant director. In other words, so in which capacity I did the press releases, a newsletter, the publications, everything that had to do with the written word, and that went out to the public. That was my job, and later on I became the director. The director when I came on board left, and I was the director for a few years. And in 1982, I began, actually in 1980, but formerly in 1982, I began doing the arts programming here at the college. And by the mid-80s, I was the director, formerly the director of the Hostos Culture and Arts Program, which then became the center when the new campus was built. So that's overall how, what my duties were here. I came here, I had become a student of the South Bronx, so to speak, because at the journalism school at Columbia, which I attended and graduated from, I was one of two people in a class of 150 who spoke Spanish. So, of course, I got assigned all the stories in the Latino community. Loisaida, Williamsburg, El Barrio, and the South Bronx, which I really was fascinated by. I was totally captivated by what was going on here. I did a lot of work in the community, a lot of stories, and the Columbia Journalism School is not much on theory, it's all practice. They send you out on the street, you cover stories, bring the story back, the editor checks it out. And so I spent a lot of time on the street, literally on the streets here, with highfalutin people, elected officials, with gang members, with people in the arts, with people in the health profession, especially. I covered a lot of stories at the old Lincoln Hospital. If you will recall, that was over by the Bruckner Expressway. And when I started, it was the South Bronx was beginning to collapse. That implosion that has become, so famous and made famous by, presidents who visited the community and remarked on the decline of the community, and even people like Howard Cosell, who made that famous comment on the Bronx is burning. So I was a witness of that burning of the Bronx, and it was a time when, while it was burning, there was also hope. There was a lot of hope of we're talking about the end of the Johnson legislation. What do they call that? FDR is the New Deal, but what was Johnson?
Anti-poverty.
Yeah, all the anti-poverty things with all the model cities and all that was going on. So there was a lot of hope, but at the same time, it was collapsing. And then the United States, New York in particular, went into an economic swoon, with all sorts of economic problems, which I won't get into here. I'm not qualified to talk about it, but I definitely saw the the consequences of it. And it was a time where the inner city as a viable place was being questioned. Was it possible for people to make a go of it in the inner city? And on the other hand, there were all these anti-poverty programs. And Ostos was part of that. It came into being when, at that time, where we were in that phase, that sort of phase where the hope of the civil rights movement, the hope of social progress and everything was there, and yet this economic reality where the United States was, and especially the Northeast and New York City, was going into this, as I said, economic swoon. And so you have these two things, hope and then impending disaster. And the question was, what was going to win out? How were the decision makers going to deal with the situation? What was their answer to this situation? It became pretty clear early on that it was just too much for them, and they were going to abandon this effort to deal with the issues of the inner city. And for example, Roger Starr, who was the head of the South Bronx effort here to revitalize the community, when it hit the fan in the mid 70s, his response was to cut back and to retrench and give up on services. In other words, the guy who was assigned the job to revitalize the community was really raising the white flag. And the same thing happened in the City University. Ostos had come into being, opened its doors to a charter class of 600 and some students in 1970. And it was a chaotic beginning. The college was put in an old tire factory on the corner of Grand Concourse and 149th Street, and the college was just not ready to accept those 620 some odd students physically and administratively and whatnot. But to make a long story short, the first president resigned, and then the second president came on board, and finally Ostos began to claw its way back and stabilize, and had a couple of graduating classes. As I said, I came in 73, and then boom, the economic crisis hits of the mid 70s. And the same reaction the same solution that Roger Starr had for the South Bronx, that is, to retrench and pull back, was adopted by those in the City University who were supposed to help Ostos out, and who were, by dint of their jobs and what they were hired to do, they were supposed to protect us and help us. But their reaction was just like Roger Starr: retrench, pull back, and even before then, to not give us the before the crisis, even before then, to give us the resources that we needed. I'm sure others have talked about this, and maybe I shouldn't go into this too much, but what happened was that So Ostos, so I won't go into it in detail, but
that's your context.
Ostos, yes. Ostos was the solution was to merge Ostos with Bronx Community College. And that was a euphemism for closing Ostos. I mean, you just don't merge a college with 1,800 students. We had about 1,800 students there with a college of 10,000 students and have two sort of entities with the same sort of mission and everything. It would just be swallowed up and that's the end of it. And so, you know, that's what we saw in the 70s in this country was a really cowardice at the highest level. There was no real effort to fight and to fight the federal government. Abe Beame, the mayor at that time, went hat in hand to Ford, Gerald Ford, and you remember the famous Daily News headline. The answer from Ford was Ford to city, drop dead, and that was another one of those things, along with famous quotes of the 70s, along with Howard Cosell's "That the Bronx is burning." Those are the quotes that stand out, and so.
But you were studying, go back for a minute, you were studying journalism. This is how you fall in love with the Bronx, I suppose, or start a relationship with the South Bronx specifically.
Oh, yeah. Right? Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't talk about that. Yeah, I mean, you know, when I graduated from the journalism school at Columbia, the you know, I got all sorts of job offers. But there was a gang here in the South Bronx that I was writing a story on, and the leader sent me over. He said, "Wally, you know, I think you ought to go take a look at Ostos Community College over there on the Grand Concourse. I think, you know, I think it's that may be a thing for you, you know." And so I came over here, and lo and behold, they had this job. And don't ask me why, but I didn't go to AA and to the AP or anything like that. I came here to Ostos. But by then, I was so fascinated with what was going on. Plus, I made a lot of friends, lifelong friends, in that short year that I was in journalism school here in the South Bronx. So I was enamored by it, and I saw it as a noble community, you know, that was fighting, that had established itself here. That had established itself in many ways, and culturally, and every which way, and so I guess that was the attraction, and it was I made this decision, and I never left. I was here for 39 years, so.
In that, you go from a communications director, and then slowly into the cultural. Within the college.
But I just want to say one thing, just to finish the 70s, okay, because this is really important. I talked about abandonment and how the people who were supposed to be there to help us, to help this community, to help this college, abandoned us, but the community didn't take it. The community said, no, absolutely not. We're not going to take this, especially the college community. And I know Jerry Meyer and others have talked about it, so I don't want to get into that too much about, you know, the struggles and all that. It's just redundant. But I think we won, though. There were really three battles in the 70s to get the 500 building, to get the for the college to survive in 75-76, and then finally to get the money for the
renovation.
Three battles, but there was another one that but let me finish with those. And the lesson from that is that Ostos won all the battles. It was batting 1,000. You know, it wouldn't take no from the powers that be, and faculty, students, and some administrators just got down and organized and won. We won. And that is a great lesson. And I think the great lesson of Ostos' history is that when you're determined and when you have conciencia y te organiza, you win. It's a simple formula. And I've seen it time and again. The struggle, though, just to finish that thought of the struggles, I tell a lot of people, including Jerry Meyer, and I talk about this a lot, that I think the struggle really ended in 1986 when they approved the master plan and so the construction of this campus. Because without a campus, Ostos was still in peril. It was still shaky. Yes, after 1978, when we got the building on the corner, the 500 building, we were a lot more stable. The president at the time, Flora Mancuso Edwards, she instituted a lot of administrative changes. She began a concerted effort to include the community in the affairs of the college and to consult with it and inform it and keep it informed. That was one of the weaknesses that we saw in the 70s, that we did not include the community the way we should have. We learned in the struggle that had to be done. But Flora brought it to a formal level, you know, where they were formally included as part of the Ostos Community College Advisory Council, which eventually became the foundation. But going back to 1986, Flora also understood that the college, without a real campus, because it was just a hodgepodge of buildings here and there, and you know, the two buildings on the corner here of 149th Street and the Grand Concourse, but we also had a church over on 151st Street across the tracks. It just wasn't going to survive. It would not have the stability to have the a stable longevity. And so she and the advisory council started a campaign to rectify that, to get a master plan approved by the City University and a design for a campus. And it was approved in 1986. By then, the city had sort of found its way out of the terrible economic morass of the 70s and had some stability. And with that came the new campus. So to me, that struggle that began in 1973 ended in 1986. There were other struggles at that time, and maybe Jerry talked about it. There was the famous, English only, where, you know, there was this national move to impose English as formally as the national language. It is, to this day, it is not. We don't have a national language. But Ostos took part in, Ostos student and faculty and administrators were at the forefront in that struggle, which was more a national struggle, but it also impacted on Ostos because of our bilingual nature and who we were. So those were not life and death struggles, but they were related to our existence and to the you know, the stability of the college. Okay, going back to the arts, Ostos is pretty unique in that it has among institutions of higher learning in the Northeast, certainly, and possibly throughout the country. I don't know. We'd have to look at it more closely. But Ostos, when it was founded in 1968, and it opened its doors in 1970. When it was founded in 1968, its mission statement included, the very mission statement of the college included the objective that Ostos would, in addition to being an institution of higher learning, would also serve as a cultural center that would buttress the cultural background of our students. But Ostos's very mission statement has this written into it. Now, I've gotten to know art centers, lots of art centers, from coast to coast, from UCLA to NYU. And yes, there are many of them on campuses across the nation, possibly more than 2,000. And if I remember my statistic well, but I don't know, certainly in CUNY, of any other unit that has that objective written into its mission statement. And I think it was, and we have to do a little research on this. Maybe this anniversary is the time to do it. Is the best time to do it. I really think it's because the members of the Puerto Rican community that struggled so hard for the creation of the college, that they were the ones responsible for that, and they had it written in because they saw the importance of buttressing and, well, what's the word that I want?
Supporting, you know, enriching.
Yeah, enriching the
elevating.
Yeah, the
feeding
the cultural backgrounds of our students, especially our students who were immigrants, and they saw the value of that, and that's why it was written in there. Now, for the first 12 or 13 years of Ostos' existence, it didn't go beyond that much. Yes, we always had events, cultural events, like any other college and all that, but we really didn't live up to the issue of, I mean, to this, what was written into the mission statement. So Flora Mancuso came on board in 1979, and she, from the very beginning, took an interest in the arts and culture, and always talked about the value of it, and you know, echoing what was in the mission statement. And I remember she would always, because by then I was the director of public relations, and she was a hard driver, tough boss, so she was always asking me, "Hey Wally, how come we're not on the front page of the New York Times? How come you're not?" You'd identify with that, right? So, and I said, well, Flora, we've got to do stuff. It's not just because we're not going to get covered because we're charming or we're cute or anything like that, or we're the only Latino college. That's an old story that's been written about. We got to do stuff. And I said, we're already doing stuff in the area of healthcare and all that. It's even nationally known and everything. But we could do some cultural programming. And so this went on between us back and forth until one day we were driving down to tape a show because she had a TV show on WNYC, which I produced. And we were in the car driving down there, and we got a little testy with each other about this subject the fact that I hadn't gotten the college on the front page of the New York Times. And then she said, okay, you do it. You get a committee together and do and come up with programming, and I'll get the money. And I said, but Flora, I don't even know how to get the piano tuned. How am I going to, I'm a words man. The only thing I've produced is a couple of open houses. And she said, yeah, but you're the closest thing I have. So do this. And sure enough, there was a memo on my desk the next day telling me that I had to do this. And so I got the obvious people, the artsy people on campus to be members of the committee. And we came up with the programming. And I remember that at that time, some big personaje in the arts here in the Bronx, I won't mention the person's name or even mention the gender, but that person came up to me and said, Wally, this is Flora has you doing an exercise because you're never going to get an audience in the South Bronx. It's not going to happen. So, it's just an exercise. Well, I have to admit that I was worried about the audience part because the audience, it's true. People feared the South Bronx, and we had just gone through all the fires and all that. And they, were afraid of the wild dogs and the gangs and whatever. And so I was worried about that. But I knew that the part about Flora making this into an exercise, that I mean, if you know Flora Mancuso Edwards, you know that she doesn't waste time with exercises. You're either in it or you're not. And sure enough, I submitted it, and sure enough, she came up with the money for the first season, and that's how it started. And the artists, that was another issue that we were a little worried about too. Would the artists want to come to perform in what was really a stinky old gym here in the South Bronx? and they did. They did, including Danny Rivera and Ruben Blades. People of that, artists of that category, of that stature. And from then on, it just, it was more that we had to, tell them we'd have to do it sometime later because so many wanted to come and perform here. And so, and then the issue of the audiences, that was resolved early on too, because people came. They were starved for a cultural activity here in the South Bronx. There were very few of us here in the South Bronx. Hostos, cultural organizations, in other words, Hostos Pregones, the South Bronx Community Action Theater, and maybe a couple of there were a couple of galleries, but that was it. And we were culturally rich. This is what I used to say. We were culturally rich but venue poor in the South Bronx.